Let's talk about JC Romero for, 2 minutes.
That's about all he's worth talking about. Romero, left-handed depth, he's been wild his entire career to the point where managers are publicly, I think Charlie Manuel publicly said, well, was it him or was it, some of the Yankees? Whoever it was, they said, essentially, boy, JC Romero needs to cut down on his strikeouts, as if it's like fatty foods or something.
He needs to cut down on his strikeouts?
Or walks, his walks, sorry. He's cut down on his walks.
JC Romero, you strike out too many batters.
Yeah, exactly. How dare you be effective? And he's had okay strikeout numbers. Again, you know, I say that a lot, but nothing to write home about. But he also has, you know, really bad walk numbers. Just way too many free passes for a guy who has, you know, mediocre stuff. So, you know, for his sake, you know, I'm hoping that he can, you know, just take some of the load off Brothers and Reynolds and, you know, just give a couple innings here and there and, you know, whatever. It's a pretty blah signing. If you recall, JC Romero was suspended for PED abuse. And his is an interesting kind of case because he, you know, it's like saying, yeah, there's no guilty men in Shawshank Prison. JC Romero claims that he was using an over-the-counter thing from GNC that he had checked by two nutritionists who both said, yeah, you're clear of the banned substance, and then he tested positive for the banned substance.
Well, I also heard that one of the places that he consulted on this was apparently accidentally using the wrong list. They consulted the list of banned substances instead of the list of unbanned substances and told them the wrong information. I'm not sure how true that is, but, I mean, that's one thing that I heard whispered about.
That's pretty powerful incompetence right there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so Romero, I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt as far as...
Well, it's certainly not like he's the first player in our organization who's had to go through that before. We had, Betancourt, had some issues with the Indians back in the day.
Hurgis was on the
Hurgis got HGH, yeah. And then Omar Quintanilla was suspended for something. Although he actually said the same thing. He said he bought something from GNC, didn't he?
Was that possibly? I don't remember what Quintanilla's specific case was.
He was in the minors last year. And,
I remember that's where he got the suspension. I just don't recall what his story was with it. If he actually, you know, was like penitent or if it was a big mistake or whatever. But, oh, and there's one you might have heard of too. Jason Giambi.
Of course. Yes. I guess I had felt we already met our Giambi quota for the episode.
Yeah.
And, did not have him.
We're talking about steroids though. We kind of have to mention Giambi, even if it's, like a kind of, it's kind of seems like a mean joke, but at the same time, you can't not make it.
No.
And this is with all the loving fanboyish adoration imaginable, which is kind of creepy, but you know, hey, here we are.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, yeah. So Romero, I'm not exactly sure what they felt they needed out of him, but.
Well, at this point, I mean, I agree with that on principle. At the same time, looking at the situation, we had Edgar Gonzalez in our bullpen.
Yeah, that's a bad thing.
I would say that that's an upgrade. I don't necessarily know that an upgrade matters. Like, I don't necessarily know that the team is going to be a lot better with Romero there than somebody else. But at the same time, I guess the point is there's room to do something like this without any significant consequences. They're basically like, we might as well put this guy in here.
Yeah, what's it really going to hurt? A prorated league man. Oh, no, whatever will we do? I was just thinking, too, about the bullpen. Just, bullpens are so fungible. Like, everything always changes. You get your JC Romeros and your Edgar Gonzalez's and your Edgemar Escalonas and guys like that coming up and down. If you kind of cut off the loose ends, trim the fat of the bullpen a bit and get, you know, it's been pretty solid as far as the core of it goes until just recently. Lindstrom, the Matt Penn, obviously, Reynolds, Lindstrom, and Belisle. And then Houston Street, you know, he's now on the DL. Mm-hmm. And then Betancourt's had his bouts of ineffectiveness. But it seems like, the Matt part of the bullpen has been just consistently, like, just there and effective. You know, not flashily effective, but effective.
Lindstrom started to slip there for a little bit. as yeah. well. But it was pretty minor and might have been related to some of the nerve issues he was having.
Yeah, I'm willing to give him the medical pass on that, but I think the point that I'm trying to make is just, you don't see a lot of, this many middle relief guys be just this consistently, you know, there. They're like the unheralded heroes. Like, Houston Street gets all the saves, and because Betancourt had this super efficient season last year and he takes forever and he's kind of a character like that, he gets, a different kind of attention. Not to mention the other thing that got Betancourt attention this year. Then you got your Franco Morales and your Felipe Paulinos, who obviously aren't with the club anymore, but they're like, oh, all the potential and head cases and meh. So they get all the attention for being extraordinarily, like, not good. And then just kind of in the middle here, you got Rex Brothers, a rookie phenom as well. But then you got Reynolds and Lindstrom and Belisle just kind of doing their thing. Mm-hmm. Two righties and a lefty. It's like the perfect, like, blend of guys there. It's like, nope, we're just going to quietly be good all season. And, you know, don't worry about us. We're fine. Now you don't gotta pay attention to us.
I remember back in spring training, several months ago when there was, we had an extreme depth shortage of lefty, pitchers, specifically relievers, and I think it had already pretty much become a foregone conclusion right away that Rex Brothers was not going to be, headed straight onto the team, but by midway through spring, we had Matt Reynolds doing awful and Rex Brothers doing amazing,
mm-hmm.
and, if one more week of that pattern before Matt Reynolds started to improve, it probably could have shaken out like that starting the season.
I still wish we had Matt Anderson with this team.
I don't know who that is.
It was either 04 or 05. He was a former number one overall pick with the White Sox, I believe. And he's the kind of guy who can throw 100. He was almost Ubaldo. He could throw 100 miles an hour. And, like, just a screaming fastball. But he was even wilder than Ubaldo. And it wasn't like a nibbling sort of thing or not trusting your secondary stuff or what have you. He was just all over the place. And
sounds kind of like Juan Murillo.
Yeah, kind of, except he was much, much, much better than Murillo. Oh. Well, as far as scouting and talent-wise goes.
Okay.
Murillo is 100 miles per hour of straight fastball and then a weak slider to kind of go with it. Anderson was a much better pitcher than that, but he didn't really pan out with the Rockies either. He could never get over his bouts of wildness. But of course, that was when we had a bullpen that had, we had guys like David Cortez, Dan Mascelli,
I remember David Cortez, but that's at the very, very beginning of my Rockies following experience.
Oh, Cortez is a Mexican hero because he pitched in the 2006 WBC and did like a phenomenal job as a reliever for them. Missing one pitcher. What's his name? Mike DeJean. He was there too. That's what I was thinking of. That was back in the days of like, wow, that's really the bullpen?
Yeah.
Okay. It was not a pretty picture, but whatever, it worked.
Yeah, and I still remember, I always, it's kind of become a joke now, but both, I guess here on the show, but also on the blog itself, that I'm always so skeptical of the bullpen, and I think part of that might be related to, going through the 2006, bullpen for a year, which must have had like 20 different people in it at different times, not because any of them were getting hurt, it's just because they'd call one up and he'd, get in four games and give up two runs each time, and they'd have to option him down and bring up somebody else, and so on and so forth.
Total bouts of ineffectiveness. I mean, that was the year they had Tom Martin.
Tom Martin was there. Scott Doman was there. Cortez was there.
Yeah, Doman was only there for like half the season, and then he got traded to Kansas City in the Jeremy Affeldt trade.
Yep. If Sheely brought us Affeldt, then Doman brought us Denny Bautista.
I'd rather think that Sheely brought us Bautista because both of them panned out to effectively nothing. But here's one of the guys in that bullpen. Fuentes was closing that year. Jose Mesa was a setup man.
He was. Ray King was there.
He was a lefty guy because I remember it was a big deal that Ray King was there. Ray Burger King. He was looked at to be the lefty specialist. And they're saying, here's the deal. We want to give you the shot to be the seventh inning guy, but if it doesn't work out, you're going to be back to just lefties again. And so he's like, all right, well, we'll give us a try. And then he couldn't find himself getting righties out and ended up, you know, just back being a loogie, which is just too bad for him. But it, what's funny about it is in 2006, everything sucked about Ray King's game. His, he allowed a 901 OPS to hitters. A 901 OPS to hitters? Like, that's unfathomably bad.
Yeah, that's not the kind of number you've seen on this team in quite some time.
And he was actually worse against lefties than he was against righties. Although his strikeout to walk ratio is much better against lefties. Lefties hit him for a 901 OPS, and righties hit him for an 897 OPS. Like, just pathetic.
Wow.
And the good thing was he gave up, I think, Larry Bigby and Aaron Miles for him. I don't know why, but whatever. So, yeah, that was 2006's bullpen, at least the Ray King part of it.
Yes.
I feel like I'm missing someone else funny in there.
There were quite a few.
I forgot Sunwoo Kim was with the team still, because 2005 Sonny Kim threw, like, a complete game shutout, and then they went to arbitration with him, and I can't remember if he won or lost, but they ended up, he was just so horrifyingly ineffective, it was just ridiculous.
Both Ramirez and Corpus made their debuts that year.
That's correct. And Corpus still had his weird Panamanian throw at that point in time.
Yeah. He had that for quite a while, and it was dreads for a while, too.
Yep, he had the cornrows, or the braids at least. Wow, Jeremy Effett was bad out loud in 2006.
Yeah, he was. He was only there for like six or 7 weeks, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, did we make that? I think we might have made that deal after the deadline.
The AFL deal?
In August, yeah. I feel like we did.
I don't think so, because I don't think someone like, what was the date on that acquisition? Let's see. July 30th. It was at the deadline.
It was at the deadline, okay. So, 2 months worth of time there. For AFL during that season. And then I guess it was 07, he went on that crazy streak without giving up any home runs for, like, most of the year. I'll always remember that because this was back in my days of posting on the MLB boards. I made a post about how, I did some sort of discussion of his home run streak, and that very day, he gave up his first home run of the year. Funny how that seems to work, but anyway, I don't know that we have much more to talk about regarding the 2006 bullpen. We can talk about the good news about Juan Nicasio.
Yes, we didn't actually talk about Nicasio yet, have we?
No, but I think there was some intent in that the whole Rockies fandom was a little bit depressed about it, and now that's kind of come from not necessarily pessimistic, but disappointed look at the situation to now. Everything that we're hearing from the team about his progress is phenomenal.
Well, for those of you who might have missed it, it was a second inning against the Washington Nationals, I think 3 weeks ago on Friday. Maybe it was two. Anyways, Ian Desmond at bat, 0-1 pitch, lined right back at Nicasio. Nicasio, he's already off balance on the left side of the mound, tries to get his glove up to cover him in time. It's too little too late. And the ball nails him in the side of the head. He goes limp and collapses. His head hits the ground, and we're thinking that's what broke his neck. Ended up fracturing the C1 vertebrae in his neck, but his hands were moving. I believe his legs were moving a bit. He was breathing and talking to everyone while they were getting him ready to go. And he had neck surgery the following morning to fix that vertebrae.
Yeah, they put a replacement in, I believe, a complete... I'm not sure what material it is, but they had to replace part of the neck there.
Yeah, they got a plate in his neck now or something like that.
Yeah.
But the thing is, they're saying that once he's out of his brace and all that, he will probably be able to go back and do whatever he wants to do. It sounds like he's going to make a full recovery. I mean, he's been walking to Coors Field every day for several days now from his apartment downtown. And just hanging out with the team and stuff. And he's going to address the media tomorrow, and being Tuesday. So we'll hear more about what's going on then. But the cool thing is that he's up and walking. I mean, that's phenomenal for a guy who broke his neck.
Yeah, and he's having a relatively positive, almost amusing, joking attitude about it. He keeps saying that he's going to be like I heard today on the radio on the drive back home that the first thing he did when he got into the clubhouse, still in his neck brace and all in casual clothing and everything, but the first thing he asked was, "Will you let me pitch batting practice?"
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Well, they're throwing out the first pitch tomorrow, I think. Him and his mother. Or something like that.
That's cool.
Which is awesome, but I'm disappointed that I'm not gonna be there. Actually, I should just go.
Hopefully he doesn't, I mean, obviously by throw the first pitch, he's gonna toss a ball. He's not gonna actually throw.
I highly doubt he's gonna actually throw.
Yes. Maybe they'll probably have the, mother actually throw the ball. I don't know.
I think they might both. I mean, if he's doing that well right now, then, I mean, I don't see why he couldn't do a ceremonial kind of, you know, first lob.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
But yeah, no, I mean, the positive, there's just nothing but positives to take out of this right now. Cause, I mean, if we really wanted to and we wanted to pretend that he's not a human being, we could freak out about how the Rockies pitching depth is even more hurt now. But if, once you kind of step back and realize that he's a living, breathing, you know, human covered in flesh and stuff, the fact that he is doing this well, this fast, is just outstanding. And right now, everything is looking up for him, and, you know, even if you are just interested in his baseball production, you know, he could come back. It's going to be what all the doctors are saying right now, it's just going to be kind of a... It's going to be a physical and mental hurdle still, but it's not going to be like a... You know, he's in a wheelchair or something like that. It's...
Sure. He'll need some physical therapy, I'm sure, for getting a proper movement back into his neck. And then obviously the big deal is, will he be able to function emotionally on the mound after something like that happens? Uh-huh. And so, I mean, we can't expect right away a super quick return. Like, I mean, best case scenario, he comes back in spring training. And is at the very least able to work out with the team and so forth.
Yeah.
But we can't expect that he's going to be back, you know, as our number three or four starter right away.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. There's no way the team rushes him or anything like that. It's going to be all at his pace. But, just great to hear it. It makes me feel really happy to know that he will probably at least have a shot to try to do this again. Not a lot of players can break their neck and then have a shot to try again.
And this early in his career, if everything works out and he pitches for several years, it's going to be, he'll be one of those players that always has a story to go along with him for the Vin Scullys of the world to talk about, every time he's on the mound. So, you know,
yep.
That certainly is, a positive, attribute. Of having something like this happen to you is you gain quite a bit of notoriety in the game, and you know here's to hoping that he's able to recover and turn in a good career in the future. So
absolutely.
Okay, well, we've talked about Millwood and Romero and Nicasio and Anderson and Giambi for some reason.
He hit a walk-off. That's why we hit talked about Giambi.
That's right. I already forgot about that. That's how invested I am in this team right now. I watched the ending of a spectacular game 2 hours ago, and I've already forgotten. Wonderful. All right. Well, unless you have anything else to add, I think that about takes care of the episode for this time. At this point, I'm not going to promise any more that we're going to be back right away. I think we'll probably try to do a show next week, but if there's nothing to talk about, then I really don't think that either us or you would like to hear us attempt to manufacture an episode of Purple Row Radio out of scraps. So with that, I think we'll set a tentative date as returning next week, but maybe it'll be a couple weeks instead. Does that sound all right?
Hey, whatever we need to do.
Okay. I'll take that as a yes.
I'm exhausted, dude.
Yeah, it's been sort of an exhausting time of the year. So With that, we will be back sometime in the future, either next week or the following week or sometime in between. And until then, go